From Capital Public Radio in Sacramento, this is Insight. I'm Beth Ruyak. We are in the midst of a new chapter of American history. The public impeachment trial of President Trump is set to begin after the holiday weekend. And between now and then, there are preparations and negotiations. There are scheduling details. And of course, everyone is waiting for the rules from Senate Leader Mitch McConnell. A programming note for you, Cap Radio plans to carry NPR's special coverage of the trial once it begins next week. Insight will be preempted on the days of the trial. However, our team is going to record a new segment every day. This is for the Insight podcast and our website. We will still be here. You just are not going to hear us in our usual 9 a.m. time slot. So let's get to today's show. In the studio with me is Leslie Jacobs, professor of constitutional law at McGeorge School of Law in Sacramento. I'm always grateful for her wisdom and her information. Thanks for being here.
Happy to be here.
So what shape is this trial taking to you?
Well, it's going to take the shape that we're accustomed to as far as impeachments, although, gosh, we shouldn't be very accustomed to them, should we? And so what's going to happen here today, we're going to see the Chief Justice sworn in, and then he's going to swear in the senators as jurors. But, of course, we know it's kind of interesting. They're the jurors, but they also get to ask questions. And, of course, they're politicians. And so we'll see how it will proceed then next week.
The Chief Justice presiding over this impeachment trial. Tell me the history there and the situation this puts John Roberts in.
Oh, gosh. What a hard situation, really, any time. But, of course, now, in particular, given the highly partisan atmosphere we live in. And so the Constitution says the Chief Justice has to preside in an impeachment trial. It doesn't say that much about impeachment, except that Congress is in charge of it. But again, the vice president couldn't preside because he has an obvious conflict of interest. He becomes the president if a president becomes impeached. And so, yes, John Roberts is in a really tricky role here. And his role becomes tricky also because he doesn't have the normal powers of a judge. That is, anything he does, 51 senators can overrule it. So that's tricky. Then also, there he is on television, supposedly impartial, but then dealing with the president and Congress and politicians. And he certainly will want to appear impartial and above the fray.
Though some of his own politics are known by past decisions he's made and writings that he's provided in court rulings.
Well, certainly. I mean, yes, all justices on the Supreme Court have backgrounds. And his is a background. He was appointed by a Republican president. He's on the conservative side, if you say conservative liberal, on the Supreme Court. But that said, he's presiding over an impeachment trial. And so we're going to absolutely presume that those inclinations having to do with political party are not there. And he's going to want to show that with everything he does.
He also doesn't know the rules. As I already mentioned, it's not like he can go to the Constitution or a law book and see specifically what the format is, even though 1999 or the 1973-74 impeachment process or 1868 had some structure. The rules are essentially, am I right, coming down to decisions made by Mitch McConnell?
By 51 senators. Mitch McConnell needs 51 senators to determine what the rules are. Okay, and yes, during the Clinton impeachment, they had the historic session where all the senators got together and agreed to the rules. You know, we're certainly not going to get that. So yes, the Chief Justice is going to have to follow those rules and make rulings that, again, can be overruled. And we're going to see down the road, of course, the most interesting thing, or a very interesting thing, is whether additional evidence will be coming in, either in the form of additional documents or particularly in terms of testimony. And I think, again, this is going to put Justice Roberts in such a difficult spot, especially if there's a contest about a witness showing up. For example, 51 senators vote that a witness should be called, and then the president says that he's allowed to prevent them from doing so. That would be a crisis.
What about new evidence? The headline today is texts, notes from Lev Parnas, new information. How is it decided what's going to be admissible and what isn't? And will the Chief Justice have a say in that? That
well,
matters?
Again,
that counts?
I'm going to paraphrase Justice Brennan, who famously said, you just have to count to five. And as far as the rules for the Senate go, you have to count to 51. Okay, but I think you may have seen Rand Paul this morning saying things to the middle senators about what's going to happen to them and putting them in the hot seat, because really it's those middle senators who have to decide what to do. And we're talking about the middle Republican senators, whether to go along with the, you know, the Mitch McConnell rules, or whether to indeed say we want more evidence. And then, of course, there are elections coming up, and this is going to be part of an issue for them when they go out campaigning.
Lev Parnas, by the way, is a Soviet-born businessman who worked with Rudy Giuliani. Stories about his new information supposedly are everywhere in the headlines today. But there's another piece of new evidence. And I think this hits differently than text messages or notes. This comes from the Congressional Accountability Office. And will you explain what's new and the weight that it carries?
Sure. That office is a nonpartisan agency that actually operates within Congress. And so it serves the interests of Congress, and it provides information. There's a Congressional Research Service as well. So Congress has several agencies that help them do their job. And so the report that came out was that, in fact, the president violated the Impoundment Act when, in fact, he didn't release the money, the $40 million, to Ukraine. And so the Impoundment Act has been around since the Nixon era. And it's essentially Congress saying that when we make the policy judgment to spend funds on a particular thing, then the president has to do it. And the president can't decide his own policy and say, no, I'm going to withhold it because I don't like your judgment, Congress. That's a separation of powers issue.
So in this case, that's a report that's been made public. The trial hasn't begun. Everybody's seeing it. Every senator can download and read it at will. Does a piece of information like that need to be included as new evidence, or is it just part of what our public domain of information is right now?
Well, I think you've got it, yeah, that it is part of the public domain of information. And it's hard to say that senators can't consider a report by the office that advises them,
right,
when they're making a decision. And so it's unlike other sorts of information, and particularly testimony, where it would be taken under oath and it would perhaps say new things.
Can I go back to the Chief Justice for a moment? Many of us are making plans based on what this trial schedule is going to be. He presides over the U.S. Supreme Court, which is in session right now. What happens during this time? How does he maintain both roles?
Well, I think we'll have to see what the scheduling looks like. That is, the Supreme Court arguments take place on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday until 12 noon. And so he does need to be there for those arguments if he's going to participate in the decision of the case. And I have to believe that he would want to do that. And so we'll have to see whether
this is interesting
schedule,
then, because we're being told that trial days will start.
Well,
the
trial days
noon
may start, and we'll see what time of day it starts on,
yeah,
when the rules come out. And then possibly this is just a priority for the Chief Justice. Obviously it is.
And we were talking Eastern time, 12 noon Eastern time, which means 9 a.m. here.
Yes, exactly.
So in hearing the live coverage, it will start at 9 a.m. Just a note about the 1999 rules that we're hearing, the Bill Clinton impeachment trial. In 1973 and 74, it was an impeachment process and then resignation with Nixon. But the other trial goes back to 1868. So each of the trials defined a template. Is that what's going to happen here? Are we going to now have the 2020 template for an impeachment trial?
Yes. I mean, let's hope we don't have another one of these soon. But yes, we'll be certainly, if it happens again, you'll be looking back and seeing what happened in this one, and possibly it would provide a framework.
I'm talking with McGeorge Law Professor Leslie Jacobs. We expect, as we're saying, the public phase of the impeachment trial of President Trump to begin on Tuesday, January 21st. Cap Radio will carry NPR's special live coverage. I just, before I leave that and switch to the topic of the ERA, want to know about putting this in the context of U.S. history. how you expect that it will be a defining event for the Constitution and for the presidency, for that office as well.
Well, impeachment is a defining event because it is supposed to be highly unusual that we would decide to kick a president out of office prior to the end of his term, right? We do it by election, and so it's something momentous to have that happen. And so certainly I think the senators feel that at this point. They are on the spot to look like they are doing something formal and appropriate and fulfilling their constitutional role. And so I do think that we'll look back at that and we'll look at it contemporaneously and say, are they behaving the way they are supposed to under the Constitution? Because we're citizens and we can make our own judgment about that.
So Virginia voted to become the 38th state to ratify the ERA, the Equal Rights Amendment. I certainly grew up hearing about this from my mother and my grandmother, didn't you?
Yeah, giving away my age here, but yes, I certainly did.
Yeah, I think it was part of a lot of American women's history in this process that first started in 1923.
Exactly right, right. But of course, gained momentum and started in the 70s. Yes, and so what's interesting here is this idea that we're reviving it somehow. What a symbolic thing to have happen in Virginia. That's just, a big message that's being sent out there. But as everybody's noticed, there are some big questions about how we at this point in time would actually put a provision like this in the Constitution, both as to the procedure for doing it, but also as to the terms of the amendment itself. That is, most of the votes happened 3 or 4 decades ago.
Ratify, you mean, by the states?
Yes, to ratify. And right now, before the Supreme Court, although it has to do with a statute, they're trying to figure out the meaning of because of sex. And so to put that into the Constitution when it's become such a contested meaning, even if we get through the procedures, is a big question.
Kind of the slow movement of this, Nevada was numbered 36 in states to ratify, and that just happened in 2017. I think we should say why number 38 is so important, but put this in the context of the fact that people say this amendment has passed its deadline. It's not relevant as it is anymore.
Exactly. Well, 38 is relevant because it's 3/4 of the states, and that's what's required to ratify a constitutional amendment. Okay. And then what we should be clear about here is that if this amendment is going to become part of the Constitution, Congress has to do something. And the question is, how much of something does Congress have to do? And so the supporters of the amendment say that it would be possible for Congress to simply pass a resolution by a majority vote in both houses and to say, we're rescinding the previous deadline. And so that would make these new votes count. Okay. The other thing Congress could do for sure is simply introduce a new amendment. And it would pass that again by 2/3 in each house and put it back to the states to ratify it. Now, again, big process. You need 3/4 of them. But then we could, in this instance, the votes that have recently happened would be momentum.
ERA, Equal Rights Amendment, equal rights for men and women, for both genders. How much has this evolved to becoming a protective, reproductive rights kind of battle? Has it become tied more in recent years to the Roe v. Wade protection or potential for the Supreme Court to look at an abortion discussion as opposed to the broader idea of men and women being equal?
Well, technically, in the way the Supreme Court looks at the abortion issue, it doesn't look at it as an equality issue. And so an equal rights amendment, according to the way the Supreme Court looks at things, wouldn't have anything to do with abortion and wouldn't say anything about it. Okay, so those are two separate things. But I will say that that's the whole thing about putting in a new amendment that says because of sex. We've had 40-ish years of this amendment, and the meaning of that term has evolved in all of our understandings. And so what I think would be optimal here, again, it would slow things down, but Congress should really think about what that term means and have some legislative history about that, and then put forward an amendment, and then the states will know what they're voting on. Does sex mean abortion? Does sex mean sexual orientation? Does sex just mean men and women? Those are the sorts of answers that people voting on it would want to know.
Thank you for both of the conversations we had today. I think we need a lot of answers in the short term, but you and I will be talking again soon. Thank you
so much. Happy to be here.
That is Leslie Jacobs. She is Justice Anthony Kennedy Professor of Law at McGeorge Law School with the University of the Pacific. If the impeachment trial begins Tuesday, as is planned, you will not hear Insight next week at 9 a.m. We will be recording new content. You can find us online and in our Insight podcast. For now, though, the hour continues. And up next, a conversation about wildfires and rain in Australia. You're listening to Insight on CAP Radio.